A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am glad you're with me on the program today. We're talking about election results in Montana, where gun control advocate Ryan Busey? You know it's bad when you don't even know how to pronounce a candidate's name. But Ryan Busey has won the Democratic nomination for governor there in Montana, as Fox News Digital headlined his win. Firearms executive wins Democratic nomination in Montana gubernatorial primary. Now, it is true that Ryan Busey worked for Kimber for a number of years, but more recently, Ryan Busey has been working for Giffords as a senior advisor. He's been a paid expert for pro-gun control politicians in litigation around the country. I wouldn't call him a firearms executive. That's not how I would go with it. It gets even worse, though. The Fox Digital coverage says former senior firearms sales executive Ryan Busey has won the Democratic nomination in the Montana gubernatorial race to unseat Republican Governor Greg Gianforte in November. While most of Montana statewide leadership are currently Republican, the state's governor's seat was occupied by a Democrat for nearly a decade before being flipped red in 2020 by Gianforte. There's also Democrat Montana Senator John Tester. Busey detailed his views on what he described as the climate crisis, having a pro-abortion stance, his pro-Second Amendment viewpoint, and access to public land on his campaign website. Yeah, the story went on to say, Busey worked as a sales executive at a major firearms company for 25 years, saying on his campaign site that he supports gun ownership, but also, quote, saw how unchecked extremism risks all gun owners' rights and how that extremism could take away American freedoms and even jeopardize our democracy. Which leaves out an awful lot of Ryan Busey's story, unfortunately. You know, so Busey worked at Kimber, I believe, for 19 years. Said he, in his memoir, said he started to feel kind of squinchy about working for Kimber way back in 1999. After the Columbine shooting, but stuck around, got a paycheck, and apparently, you know, did pretty well for Kimber, at least he says he did, until I think it was 2016. And then when he left Kimber, he his first gig, I think, was with the Biden campaign as a senior advisor, and then went to work for Giffords. And then he decided to run for governor, which I think is fairly important. And I'm kind of wondering why the Fox Digital report didn't bring up any of that. I mean, it's not like this is some secret. As the National Shooting Sports Foundation's Larry Keene wrote last July, Ryan Busey is a fearmonger, or fear merchant, rather, and a liar, and no firearm industry expert. Now, at the time, Keene was responding to an appearance by Busey on MSNBC. He was interviewed by Joy Reid. And as Keene wrote at the time, during this MSNBC appearance, Busey came right out of the gate with his made-up gun facts. Keene says, of course, none of his wild ideas were challenged by Reid, who only devoured them to validate his preconceived notion that all guns are evil and gun owners are bad, except her guns, of course, or except her guest, of course. Never once did they address the need to prosecute criminals and hold them accountable. That, of course, would take away the need to swallow the gun control medicine. Reid asked what had changed in America to make it a, quote, shooting gallery. Busey said, well, we have doubled the number of guns in our society in the last 20 years. Now, think about that for a second. So this was 2023, right? Violent crime in the United States was declining from 1991 to 2019. Violent crime dropped by more than half during that time period, at a time in which Busey knows darn well that there were more guns coming into the hands of American citizens. It wasn't until 2020, right, when you had the COVID pandemic, you had the unrest and the riots after the death of George Floyd. You had the pullback by police. You had the defund the police movement. You had the closure of courts. You had the emptying of jails. That's when crime spiked. Busey didn't talk about any of that, right? What led to the rise in violent crime, by the way, a rise that may or may not, depending on what statistics you look at, may have stopped, and we may see violent crime declining. Certainly, that appears to be the case with homicides. Again, he couldn't point to any of those factors, right? It was just, wow, people buying guns. That's what turned it into a shooting gallery. That's a pro-Second Amendment stance? Really? Not in my mind. Keene said Busey wasn't done. He went on to say, in fact, nothing is more targeted at the ability to remove the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness of fellow citizens in a second or two, dozens of them, as we have seen, than the right to own firearms. That's how Busey described our right to keep and bear arms. The right to murder your fellow Americans. Now, again, I don't know of any Second Amendment supporter who would describe our right to bear arms in self-defense, in defense of others, in defense of this country, as the right to murder people. I know plenty of anti-gun activists who would describe the Second Amendment that way, but I don't know of any Second Amendment supporter who would talk about our right to keep and bear arms in that fashion, even being interviewed on MSNBC. So, yes, Ryan Busey is a former firearms executive. He is currently a gun control advocate. And it would be great if the media would acknowledge that. So does Busey have a chance this November? Well, let's take a look at the numbers. We'll start with the numbers from last night. So this is as of midday Wednesday morning. According to the New York Times, about 86.3% of the votes tallied in the Democratic primary, Ryan Busey. The clear victor, right? About 71% of the vote. 66,832 votes for Busey, his Democratic challenger, Jim Hunt, pulling down another 27,602 votes, almost 30% of the vote. So, you know, I mean, you're looking at, and again, this is 86.3% of the votes tallied at this point, right? So let's do Ryan Busey a favor. Let's assume that there are going to be close to 100,000 voters in Montana's Democratic primary. Again, we don't have the actual tally yet, but it's going to be close to 100,000. We can round up. All right, what about on the Republican side last night? Well, Greg Gianforte also projected to win with 97.9% of the votes counted. Gianforte pulling down about 75% of the Republican vote, 138,292 votes for Gianforte. Tanner Smith, his Republican challenger, getting another 45,348 votes. Now, again, the vast majority of Republican votes have been tallied, so we can't add too many votes to those totals. But you're still looking at over 180,000 votes in the Republican primary, compared to 100,000 votes in the Democratic primary, which is not good news if you're Ryan Busey, right? Now, listen, primary elections are different animals. We know that there are going to be more people voting in the general election than voted in the primary, right? In fact, we can look back 4 years ago in Montana, the last time there was a governor's race, and we can see how the primary and the general election stacked up. So, in the primary, Democratic primary in 2020, there were 148,593 votes cast. In the Republican primary that same year, there were 223,150 votes cast. So, first of all, turnout way down in Montana this year on both the Republican and Democratic side than 4 years ago, which is surprising to me. We did have a presidential primary. Donald Trump and Joe Biden both won those primaries handily. Maybe that was a little bit different. Maybe there was more excitement on primary day 4 years ago because there was more of a contest. But at that point, I don't really think that was the case. Trump was the presumptive nominee for the Republicans. Biden at that point had pretty much wrapped up the nomination. Right. I think he was everybody's second choice, but he seemed to certainly be in the driver's seat by the time the Montana primaries were held. So I'm not sure why turnout was so much lower on Tuesday than it was 4 years ago. But regardless, 4 years ago, Democrats pulled down about 150,000 votes in the primary. Republicans pulled down about 225,000 votes in the primary. What about the general election? How'd that shake out? Well, in November of 2020, Greg Gianforte won the governor's race with 328,548 votes, 54.4%. The Democratic nominee got 250,000 votes, well, 250,860 votes, 41.6%. Both campaigns added to their totals from the primary, right? Democrats had pulled down about 150,000 votes in the primary. They got about 250,000 votes in the general election. Republicans in Montana in 2020 got about 220,000 votes, 225,000 votes in the primary, and 325,000, actually 328,000, in the general election. So both parties added to their totals by about 100,000 votes. But again, the enthusiasm gap on the Democratic side was evident, both in the primary election and in the general election. If we compare 4 years ago to last night's results, well, we'd be looking at about 200,000 votes for Ryan Busey in November and about 280,000 votes for Greg Gianforte on Election Day. So I would say that Ryan Busey has an uphill climb if he's going to be elected governor of Montana. I don't think it's in the cards, but I'm curious to see what happens with the gun control groups. Look, he is their declared candidate. So how much money does Giffords spend trying to boost Ryan Busey's chances, his slim chances of becoming governor in Montana? Maybe a better question is, how much money does Giffords waste trying to elect Ryan Busey as governor of Montana? You know, again, the gun control groups have more money to spend this year than Second Amendment groups, unfortunately. But they still have to decide where they're going to spend their funds. How much are they going to devote to trying to reelect Joe Biden? You've got to expect the bulk of their spending is going to try to boost Joe Biden's reelection bid, right? Because if Donald Trump comes in, well, the Office of Gun Violence Prevention goes away from the White House. Steve Dettelbach is removed as ATF director. The gun control agenda that groups have been able to advance through executive action comes to a complete and utter halt. So job one for the gun control groups is getting another 4 years of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. But then, they also have to try to hang on to their narrow majority in the Senate. John Tester, the Democratic senator from Montana, he did win his primary last night. Tim Sheehy won the Republican primary, and I think she is in a very good position to actually unseat John Tester. Then you've got the West Virginia Senate race, Joe Manchin stepping aside, declaring himself to be an independent. There's, a slim possibility that he could run for Senate as an independent, but a lot of the political folks who looked at this said they think that he's more likely to mount an independent run for governor in West Virginia. So West Virginia looks like another really good opportunity for Republicans to flip a seat in November. So the gun control groups, again, they're going to have to triage their spending. What seats are they going to try to defend? What seats are they going to try to flip? And again, the priority, top priority, is keeping Joe Biden in the White House. So how much money will they give to Ryan Busey's campaign? Because he's going to need a lot of cash. Word of mouth is not going to get him elected. There are going to be ads running almost nonstop between now and November using Busey's own words to highlight what he really thinks about our right to keep and bear arms, to highlight the fact that he's served as an expert witness in support of gun control laws, including gun bans and magazine bans. And the gun control groups trying to spin that away, you're not going to be able to do it with press releases. You're not even going to be able to do it with, high visibility endorsements. You're going to need a sustained campaign spinning away years of anti-gun activism. And that costs money. So I'm curious to see again, how the gun control groups play this, this may actually end up being a bit of a trap for the gun control lobby, forced to spend money that they don't really want to spend on a race that is, you know, largely unwinnable because it's their guy, right? What do? You can't cut him loose. You got to give him some support. I'm sure that there was encouragement on the part of Giffords and other gun groups when he decided he was going to run for governor, telling him that the money would be there. We'll see if it emerges. And I will say this, because like I said, I don't think Busey has a chance of winning in November. I really don't. But let's not ignore the fact that the gun control lobby is running one of their candidates in Montana, in a pro-gun state. They are taking the fight to our friendly territory. And I think it's worth considering what we as Second Amendment advocates can do in that same vein. Again, we may be talking about races that are not winnable, but may still be opportunities to get our message out to a portion of the electorate that typically doesn't hear from pro-gun candidates. And again, I don't necessarily think this needs to be coming from the Republican Party either. There may be opportunities to run pro-gun Democratic candidates in places like Baltimore, in Chicago, in Philadelphia. But I don't think we can simply sit idly by while gun control groups are trying to make inroads on, you know, pro-gun turf. I think it's incumbent on Second Amendment groups and Second Amendment supporters to do the same, to go into these deep blue districts, these pro-gun control districts, and to challenge the prevailing narrative with the facts, with the Constitution, and with candidates who can make a convincing argument using their own personal experience, using their own expertise, challenge again that prevailing wisdom in these deep blue districts. Probably not going to happen this election cycle, but 2 years from now, I would love to see our answer to Ryan Busey running for governor in California or Connecticut or Delaware, right? Again, uphill fights. But it's important to take those fights to the anti-gunners rather than them just coming to us. All right. Before we turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a moment. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts, the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. And Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. Today's recidivist report from North Carolina. You know, Governor Jared Polis signed a bill in Colorado a couple of days ago that makes college campuses gun-free zones. I think just by default. But I know that the CU regents are also expected to take a vote rescinding the campus carry policy here in the months ahead. One of the things we hear all the time, one of the arguments we hear all the time, is that, you know, kids are just and yes, kids, when we're talking about adult college students, kids are just not mature enough. Forget about the college professors. Forget about the administrators. Right. It's just an emotional place college campuses are. I mean, my God, look, you've got these protests going on just the past couple of months. Can you imagine if you had concealed carry holders running around? Of course, we have to ban guns from campus. But how effective are these bans? What actually happens when somebody violates the law and carries a gun on a college campus in a state where that's not allowed? Well, in North Carolina, a Winston-Salem teen was convicted of having a loaded gun at Winston-Salem State University, and his punishment was probation. That's it. It was April 2023. Winston-Salem state officials put out a campus safety advisory alerting students, staff, and faculty. But the local sheriff and the local police department never put out a press release about this case. 19-year-old Christopher Anthony Allen pleaded guilty this week to possession of a gun on educational property, resisting an officer, and carrying a concealed weapon. He also pleaded guilty to possession of marijuana, attempted trafficking in opium, and carrying a concealed gun. The prosecutor, Sarah Lebner, assistant DA in Forsyth County, told the judge that Allen is a verified member of a gang. She said that she said that Allen and other gang members went to a dorm on the campus on April 4th last year, when Allen was 17 at the time, wasn't a student there at the university. Investigators of the sheriff's office were watching him that day because of his gang affiliation. They followed him to the campus. They saw him with a large group of students at the dorm. Investigators moved in to try to make an arrest. At one point, he then ran from them. Deputies arrested him outside of the building. He was accused of possessing a loaded gun, possessing a stolen firearm, carrying a concealed gun, possession with intent to sell and deliver a controlled substance and marijuana, as well as two counts of possession of drug paraphernalia. Okay. And again, apparently there was another teen who was also taken into custody that same day, also carrying a concealed firearm and possession of up to half an ounce of marijuana. That individual, Jalen Jermaine Howard, who's now 22, pleaded guilty on May 13th to possession of a gun on educational property and carrying a concealed firearm. The judge in that case gave Howard a suspended prison term of 3 months to 13 months in prison and then put him on probation for 1 year. Yeah. Mr. Allen, after he was arrested and before he was sentenced, was arrested again, charged on February 23rd of this year with several drug offenses as well as a weapons charge after Winston-Salem police found him and a woman sleeping in chairs at the Sleep Inn on Hampton Inn Court. Allen apparently was unconscious. When they searched him, they found he had a stolen gun, a small bag of marijuana, 67 pills of fentanyl and methamphetamine, as well as $710 cash. Allen's attorney told the judge that her client had overdosed on fentanyl at the hotel. That was just a couple of months ago. So again, what type of punishment did Christopher Anthony Allen, a known gang member, according to prosecutors, man who multiple arrests over the past couple of years for attempting to deal drugs and illegally carrying a firearm, one of which was stolen, how much prison time did Allen get for bringing a gun on a campus and drugs on a campus? The answer is no prison time whatsoever. No. Judge Jason Ramey gave Allen a suspended prison sentence of 1 year and 10 months to 3 years and 10 months in prison, then placed him on probation for 3 years. Did tell him he had to spend 4 months in the Forsyth County Jail, but that is the only time behind bars that Christopher Anthony Allen will face. So again, if this is the punishment for gang members coming onto campus trying to sell drugs while they are illegally armed, you get probation for that offense. Why are we stopping people with concealed carry licenses from carrying on campus in North Carolina? What is the point of that? And what's going to happen to that concealed carry holder if their only offense is carrying a firearm on a campus setting? Are they going to get prison time? They better not. Not after we've just seen what happened to gang members who are trying to deal drugs on campus while illegally possessing firearms. Again, if this is the severity of the crime, probation, then let's just end the prohibition on carrying altogether. Let those folks who are responsible gun owners, who are legal gun owners, be able to protect themselves from gang members and drug dealers who might show up on campus in North Carolina and in other states. All right, today's Armed Citizen story from Ponca City, Oklahoma, a beautiful little town in north central Oklahoma. I had the pleasure of visiting there several times when I lived in the state. A deadly home invasion, though, in Ponca City ended with an intruder killed in an exchange of gunfire with the homeowner. According to authorities, the suspect and the victim did know each other. This happened, I guess this was Monday. Witness reported the subject had been shot while trying to force his way into a home. When officers arrived, they found 29-year-old Jacob Grudowski nearby, suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. Police said that Grudowski was reportedly involved in an ongoing domestic situation with one of the people inside the home. And according to Fox 25 in Oklahoma City, when Grudowski arrived, he fired multiple rounds while trying to force his way inside the residence. Someone inside the home fired back, and Grudowski was hit multiple times. Authorities say that life-saving measures were performed when officials found him, but he was pronounced dead at the scene. Ponca City Police still investigating, but right now, this would appear to be a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. Somebody tries to shoot their way inside your house, you've got the right to shoot back. But we'll keep our eyes open for any details and give you any further information as it becomes available. Finally today, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a Louisiana man who rescued an 80-year-old Vietnam veteran from his burning home. Kenneth Cobb was found unconscious near several oxygen tanks. Cobb has lung cancer. He's got other chronic illnesses. And he told Fox 8 in Louisiana, he said, I should have been charred. He said there was no way out of it. It was May 29th. There was an electrical fire started in the kitchen of Cobb's home in Houma, Louisiana. Cobb was unconscious when the fire started. And he said, yeah, I've got 6 bottles of oxygen right here on the side of me. He said, those things should have blown up with that much heat. How they didn't blow up, he said, it's a miracle to me. Well, there were multiple miracles for Mr. Cobb that night. Excuse me. There was a gentleman who was driving by who saw what was going on and decided to intervene. He said it's hard to explain the heartwarming feeling when you meet somebody's family and you save their life. Their family is still complete because of something that you've done. He said he didn't know who this guy was. He didn't even know that there was anybody in the home. But he said, I just saw a lot of thick smoke, flames kind of mixed in. He said, I saw the bottom of his feet, the bottom of the wheelchair, and I immediately knew this man's in trouble. She was able to pull him out of the house without severe injury. Cobb said when he looked at the pictures of his home afterwards, he said, there's no way. But this individual burst through the door, pulled Cobb in his wheelchair out of the house. His coworker called 911. First responders were able to arrive and put out the flames. That's just amazing. It is an amazing situation for these individuals. Again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a stranger in need. Jeremy Trahan, saving the life of Kenneth Cobb without thoughts of his own safety. I mean, again, we're talking about a house on fire. And as Mr. Cobb said, oxygen tanks all over the place. It could have blown up at any time. But Jeremy Trahan saw somebody in need, and he decided to help. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Jeremy Trahan, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow as we wrap up a week's worth of coverage here on Cam & Company. But don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you covered on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, Hunter Biden's trial in Delaware. Hunter Biden's own words may be the worst evidence against him, but the trial does continue. And we've got complete coverage for you at BearingArms.com. Be sure to check out the coverage at TownHall.com as well. And tomorrow, we're going to get some decisions from the Supreme Court. We'll see if the Rahimi case, if Garland versus Cargill is among those decisions that are released tomorrow. But fingers crossed, we get some good news from the court here very soon. We'll wrap up full coverage of that for you, Bearing Arms, on Thursday as well. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.